listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey there, welcome to the Dr. Nina Show here on LA Talk Radio. I am your host, Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, and I am here to help you stop counting calories, carbs, and fat grams. Stop obsessing about food. Stop thinking about what you are eating every minute of the day, or maybe it just feels like that, or maybe that's what's actually happening. I'm here to help you stop doing all of that so you can get to a healthy weight, make peace with food, and get on with your life. That is my goal for you. I want you to wake up and think about your day, not your diet. If you'd like to join me here in the studio, the number is 818-570-5085, 818-570-5085. I would love to hear what is on your mind, what is weighing on you, because the real problem with binge eating, stress eating, or any kind of emotional eating is not food. That's right. The problem with all of these problematic eating is not food. The problem is what's eating at you, and food becomes the solution. So we're going to get to what's eating at you, resolve that, and that leaves you free to get on with your life. So last week, I started talking about binge eating disorder and dispelling some of the myths. And I've also gotten a couple of questions on Facebook from people saying, well, you know, what about food addiction, or aren't I physiologically addicted to food? So I'm going to continue talking about this topic. Basically, everyone who comes into my office seeking treatment for binge eating, every one of them is convinced that their problem is willpower, that they lack willpower. They are preoccupied with food. They can't stop thinking about what they're going to eat or not eat. And they report that all their attempts to eat normally, or what they think is normally, always fail. And they really think that they're food addicts, that they're addicted to sugar or white flour or carbs or whatever. So they think they lack willpower because they have a physical addiction to food. And I know that I went over this a little bit last week, so pardon me for being repetitive, but some things you just can't hear enough, right? Okay, so is food addiction real? Now, there are some theories that and studies that appear to make a case for the reward theory of food addiction that correlates certain foods with increased dopamine levels. Dopamine is a chemical that mediates pleasure and motivation in our brains. So sugar, fat, white flour, all of that, what are known as hyperpalatable foods, they activate the release of dopamine. So you eat these kinds of foods, you get your dopamine rush, you feel good, and then you want to keep eating to keep getting that dopamine release. Now, researchers also point out similarities between food and other substances, including the fact that food shares common pathways in the brain, that same with drugs. And some foods activate reward neurons and again, dopamine receptors. And also the anticipation of eating activates the same area in the brain as drugs do. So it sounds like a pretty compelling case on the surface, right? Hold on, because sugar, yeah, it does indeed change your brain, as do certain drugs. But here's the thing. Any activity involving pleasure also activates those same areas in your brain. Sex does it. Exercise does it. Spending time with your friends, doing things you like. All of that changes your brain, has the same effect on your brain. Anything pleasurable. By the way, psychotherapy also changes the brain over time and has shown to be more effective than medication alone. And there are also many alternative ways to explain this neurobiological response to food. First of all, food is meant to be rewarding. It's why the reward centers of our brains light up. It's meant to do so. It's, back in caveman days, it's what kept us alive. We needed to want to eat. So our brains are geared towards, ooh, yeah, that looks good. I gotta eat that now because that's how I'm going to survive. That's how it used to be. Also, normal hunger increases neural activation. So there are biological, physiological reasons for this reward activation. And then there is the behavioral conditioning aspect. And by the way, there are some studies that they were trying to prove that food addiction was real, right? So they posited that, okay, we're going to ask people to eat those hyper palatable foods. We're going to tell them, hey, whatever your forbidden foods are, whatever those foods are that you think you're not supposed to have, eat them, have them. And the researchers figured, oh, well, they're going to start having those foods and then their brains are just going to go more, 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 and they're not going to be able to stop. And they will therefore prove that a food addiction is a real thing. Interesting. What happened? Here's what happened. So the researchers think, we're going to tell people to eat these foods high in fat and sugar. These people are going to start eating those foods and they are not going to be able to stop because they're food addicts. Well, what happened was this. People ate less. They ate less of what their forbidden foods were because they had permission to eat them. They weren't eating out of guilt, or they weren't eating out of the anticipation of deprivation. They weren't eating for all of those psychological reasons. So clearly, when you take away the forbiddenness of it, when you take away the deprivation of it, people make choices that are actually in line with being more healthy. They're no longer eating for emotional reasons. Again, we have brains, but you know what? We have minds too. And our minds are more powerful than our brains. They work together, but when you get in touch with your mind and the hidden parts of your mind, specifically what's unconscious, then you can actually make choices that are based on, you know, what you know, instead of unconsciously just following along. So clearly, in addition to biological processes, there are psychological factors that have even more impact on our behavior because of the mind. So this may have little relevance to someone who feels like an addict. As someone recently told me, she said, the science doesn't matter. I don't care about the science. Even if you tell me I'm not technically a food addict, I still feel like I need a fix. So feeling like you need a fix is, of course, not a fact. And the deeper we dig below the surface, the more the roots of that compulsion to eat become apparent. And people always discover that their behavior serves a purpose. And when we identify that purpose and we find new ways to respond and resolve the internal conflicts or emotions or whatever it is, they stop binging. That's why I say you can't fight an invisible army, you just get beaten up. But when you make that army visible, when you make the unconscious hidden parts of you conscious, when you bring them into awareness, then you see what you're dealing with. And then you can fight back and win. So last week I talked about Belinda, who certainly felt like a food addict. And she was thinking about food all the time. At breakfast, she was thinking about lunch. At lunch, she was thinking about dinner. At dinner, she was thinking about after dinner. And at night, she was thinking about how she was going to be good the next day. And then it was, of course, rinse, repeat. And she had a young daughter. They would often make cookies, and Belinda would find excuses to send the daughter out of the room, and then she'd just eat a bunch of cookie dough in secret. And this behavior humiliated her completely, but she really felt like she was addicted to cookie dough and to sugar. So as we worked together, she came to realize that this obsession with food actually distracted her from her deeper concerns. So that's how it helped her. It helped her distract from things she didn't want to think about. And here's what she didn't want to think about. And by the way, if you have a question, you don't have to wait for me to finish my story. I will pick it back up. Just call me whenever you want to or whenever you can. Again, 818-570-5085. Call me anytime. I'll get back to my story. Okay, so Belinda, she grew up in a conservative religious community where it was not okay to question authority. And Belinda wanted to question authority. She had all kinds of ideas, and she was very inquisitive and and asked a lot of questions. And this was prohibited in this religious community. She was supposed to do what was expected of her. She married within the community, and she just tried to get on with her life and make the best of her situation and like try not to listen to that little voice in her head that said she wasn't really happy. She told herself she was doing the right thing, but her life felt wrong. And she struggled with this profound restlessness and dissatisfaction. And the only thing that comforted her was food. So thinking about food, eating food and thinking about food and weight, it was on her mind all the time. And that distracted her from what else was on her mind, distracting from a more authentic life. And also, Belinda did not have enough sweetness in her life. Food was the primary means by which she was able to experience pleasure. So she was, for two reasons. One, because it distracted her from other things she didn't want to think about. It's easier to think about food than it is to think about your profound restlessness and dissatisfaction in life. So it distracted her, and it gave her some sense of fun, which she was missing. Hold that thought. Hi, caller. You're on with Dr. Nina. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Dr. Nina. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. Who's this?
My name is Andrea. I've called in before.
Yes, I remember, Andrea. You had the wonderful question about body image and all of that.
Exactly. I have a different question today, and I think it's something I've been trying to work through. And at this point, I'd love some insight. And it has to do with, you know, the people in my life, and hopefully other people can relate to this as well. They don't necessarily understand my struggles and just struggles with food. I think to them, it comes down to just, you know, a matter of saying no or eating less. Or to them, it's about just eating everything in moderation, or that it comes from a place of, I guess, a lack of willpower, which is obviously not the truth. So here I am trying to explain this to people and explain these struggles. And by people, I mean like friends and family, but they just don't get it.
Right.
They don't. And I don't know what to do. I don't know how to handle it. And it's so stressful. I end up eating through it, which is not the case and what shouldn't be happening.
It's very upsetting, because what they don't realize is that it's not logical. It's psychological. You know, logical is, you want to stop. If you want to say lose weight, just eat less and exercise more. You want to stop this bingy behavior or whatever it is that's not making you unhappy, just stop. Well, easier said than done.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I just did a talk for this English, for Eating Disorders Awareness Week, for this company in England, and they asked me this very question, actually. And I told the story of, this is actually a friend of mine, not a patient, not a client. Friend of mine was on was at a wedding, and her name is Tilly, not her real name, but even though she's my friend, I'm still protecting her.
Of course.
She, I don't even know why I have to say that, but it's like my automatic, hey, I'm protecting everyone. So Tilly is at this wedding, and there's the reception, and waiters are passing around all these appetizers, and like Tilly leans in, grabs like a little mini quiche, and her husband like looks at her and leans his face in, and she thinks that her husband's gonna kiss her, and instead he whispered in her ear, and instead of giving her an affectionate kiss, he said, "Do you really need that?"
Oh gosh,
right. So she was totally mortified and humiliated and upset, and she was like, I mean, basically the same thing that you're saying. So he doesn't get it.
Yeah, it's a terrible position. Like, that resonates.
People don't get it. They think they're trying to help, which is what her husband thought. It's like, well, you don't want to eat those things, so I just thought I'd help you out and remind you, right? So, of course, what happens is that it's mortifying, and it makes you feel guilty, and it makes you feel shame, and then you're more likely to turn to food to resolve the shame and the guilt and the bad feelings than you are to, say, turn to the person for help. So basically, it's food policing. So one thing and food policing is shaming. It makes people feel terrible. Never in the history of all time has anyone ever said, oh, wait a minute, let me think about that. No, I shouldn't have that. Thank you so much. That's really helpful. No. Do you think you should eat that? No. Do you really need that? No one's ever been like, actually, no, I don't need that. Thank you. That's really helpful. No, it doesn't help. So
at all.
At all. So I think the
first find a nice way of telling people that without I don't know, just ruining relationships. I don't even know, but it's driving me insane. And it's, you said it right. There's that shame associated with it.
Yes. So the first thing to tell them is, look, I know you're trying to help, but it's not logical. It's psychological. Using food is my way of coping, just as other people cope in different ways that may not be so healthy for them either, whether it's drinking or smoking or gambling or, you know, whatever. People do all kinds of things to avoid their feelings. And you just say, it's my way of coping and I'm working on it. But I would appreciate it if you would not discuss food and what I'm eating at all, because that is food policing and that makes me feel worse. You're trying to help, but you're making it worse.
Worse.
Yeah.
That makes sense. That makes a lot of sense. And I think I've been almost avoiding those conversations with people just because I feel like you have to be very vulnerable and let them know of that. But at this point, it's just a terrible feeling. It's just a terrible feeling. And I almost get offended. I don't even know if that's the correct word, but it just makes everything so much worse.
Of course you get offended because it's offensive. And I actually have a video on YouTube called What Not to Say to a Dieter. And I can go through my what not to says. The first what not to say is don't be the food police. Don't say, hey, do you think you should have that? Do you really need that? Or any of those variations. Or I thought you were trying to watch what you were eating. Or
that's the worst one.
Yeah.
I get that often enough. Yeah. And that video was called What Not to Say to a Dieter.
But I'll tell you some of them now. So the first thing is, don't be the food police. Do not say anything about what anyone is eating. You are not being helpful. You are being hurtful. So you said, you can say, you don't even have to say like I'm binging or I'm eating or I'm whatevering to cope. You just say, look, I know you're trying to help, but actually this is not helpful. So I'd appreciate it if you don't try to help, because your helping is making things worse. You're quote unquote, air quotes, helping.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me. Still getting over bronchitis. Oh my gosh. It's lasting forever.
Are you feeling any better?
Oh, I feel great. I just keep coughing. Thank you for asking.
No problem.
Something else. Another thing is I tell people, do not talk about appearance. Do not say, hey, like if someone says, Oh, I'm feeling fat, or I've gained a few pounds or whatever. Do not reassure them. Do not say, oh no, you look great, because never in the history of all time has anyone said, oh, I don't like how I look, and someone else says, oh, you look great. And the first person says, oh, I do look great. Well, thank you. I don't feel that way anymore. It doesn't happen that way. So
I've never heard anybody say that ever.
Right. No. Oh, really? You think I look great? Well, now I feel like I look great. No, it doesn't work that way.
No.
Because if someone doesn't feel good about their appearance, recognize that. On the surface, you say, it must be really hard to not feel good about your body right now. That must be really hard. Not, oh, no, you look great. And on a deeper level, you know, focusing on your weight is also a distraction from other things. So, you know, it's
very
easy.
Much so.
Exactly. It's easier to feel fat, say, or focus on food than it is to feel lonely or shame or fear or anxiety or all kinds of difficult emotions.
To actually feel your feelings.
Exactly. And that's why what I recommend, those are some what not to say. I have a couple of other on the video, but in terms of what to say and what you could tell them to say, is they can ask open-ended questions, not something that you can answer with a yes or a no. So classic open-ended question is the one we therapists ask, how do you feel about that, right? But you know, a closed question is, which is not a question, by the way, is do you think you should eat that? Do you really want that? Because that is a question that's really a shameful observation. It's couched as a question, but it's really not a question. So you could say, look, don't ask me about what I'm eating. Ask me what's eating at me. Ask me how I'm feeling. Ask me what's going on in my life. Ask, hey, is there any, what can I do to help? Not even, is there anything I can do to help? That's a closed question. What can I do to help? You know, when can we hang out? Like, ask about, so in other words, you're getting them to ask about what's going on with you instead of what you're doing. Now, this means you might have to be in a vulnerable place and say, hey, I've been better. I'm not doing so great right now. And talk about why. But that's how people get to know you. And that's how you feel safe with people. But you know, tell them, don't talk about my weight. Don't talk about what I'm eating. Ask about me. Ask how I'm doing.
I like that. Thank you. That actually helps quite a bit. It's like I said, it's something I've been struggling with, and it's not easy to deal with, so I'm glad I called in. And I'm sorry for interrupting your story.
No, you did not interrupt my story. That's why I said, like, do not worry about that. I can get back to the story. I have one more thing to share, if you have time.
Of course.
Okay. So if you are the recipient of food policing, there are a few ways that you can respond. You can say, you can use my SET approach, which is situation, emotion, and translation. So the situation is when you talk about what I'm eating, that's the situation. The emotion is I feel, and what are the feelings that come up?
Is that rhetorical?
I feel, so emotion, like mad, sad, glad, afraid, shame, guilt.
Okay.
What do you feel?
You're asked, sorry.
Yeah, you.
definitely sad and ashamed.
Okay. So when you ask me, when you mention what I'm eating, I feel sad and ashamed because it means, and this is the tough, tricky part, it means what?
It means... It makes me feel, I don't know really how to even describe that. I think it hits on my insecurities and just makes me feel even worse.
So it makes me feel insecure about, it makes me feel insecure about myself. But what does it mean that they're doing it? Like, for example, you don't really understand me. You don't really get what I'm going through.
Oh, not at all.
You misunderstand me.
You don't get what I'm going through.
Right. You're treating me like a child. You're infantilizing me. Something like that.
Infantilizing, I think that's the big one.
Yeah.
And they don't understand. I feel like that's what it comes down to. There's judgment. I feel like there's a lot of not understanding me, making me feel like a child.
Yes. So that's what you said.
Hit the nail on the head.
Okay. So with certain people, not everyone, of course, but certain people, you say, you know, when you talk about what I'm eating, I feel sad and shame because it means you're infantilizing me. You're treating me like a child and you're actually and by the way, that makes it worse. With other people, you can just say, you know, I am not talking about what I'm eating. I'm not explaining what I'm eating. I'm not defending what I'm eating. I'm not justifying what I'm eating. It is my business what I eat. Thank you for helping, but it's really not helpful. Another thing you can do is, if they keep doing it, here's what you do. I'll be you and you be a food policer. So I'm eating something.
Why are you eating that?
Did you see the Super Bowl the other day? Okay, keep going. Ask me again.
What are you eating? Why are you eating?
What do you think about Trump?
That's clever. Because even though we're role playing, I still don't know. It throws you off.
Right. And then they look
at
you like,
"That's insane. I like that." I
totally
don't
deflect.
Know how to respond to that.
Got any summer plans? What are you doing for Easter? How about those Dodgers? Whatever.
I love that.
You just completely change the subject. And if they say, "Why are you changing the subject?" you say, "Why do you think I'm changing the subject?"
Yeah, that's when I become not so nice.
You know, sometimes you've got to be not so nice to make the point. And it's not mean to say, "Well, why do you think I'm changing the subject? Clearly, this is something I don't want to talk about, so please respect my wishes."
And if they don't, then
you leave the room.
That's a whole different story.
Then you leave the room. You go to, if you can't leave the place, you go to the bathroom and you come back and you just say, "You know what? If you're going to keep asking me about this, I'm just going
to
leave."
Those are the relationships I'd rather not keep in my life, to be completely honest, if you're not going to respect my wishes.
Exactly. So this is empowering, as opposed to when you defend, when you explain, and when you justify, you feel terrible and you feel like a child. But when you say...
Yeah, having to justify these feelings that I know, it's all psychological. And having to explain it to somebody who might not necessarily understand or even want to understand, you don't see smokers justifying their, smoking. You don't.
Right.
Yet when it comes to food, it feels like everybody has an opinion or has a question when it's just frustrating.
It's very frustrating.
For lack of a better word.
Yes, it's very frustrating. But hopefully this gives you some tools. And then you could do other things. Like, I notice that sometimes people are out to lunch and all they're talking about, instead of talking about what's going on in the world or what's even going on in their lives or anything, they're talking about what they're eating. "Oh, I was so good. I ate so clean this morning and I'm going to eat so clean at this lunch," and all of that stuff. So, hey, Andrea, I got to hop off and take this new call, but call me back and let me know how it goes, okay?
I definitely will. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hi, Nicole. Welcome to the... Whoops. Nicole?
Dr. Nina?
Hi, Nicole. Hi. I recognize your number.
Good morning.
How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. I'm doing definitely better than the last week or the last time I called in. I really think that what you say about it's not what you're eating, it's what's eating at you is like so right on. I just feel like there were a lot of anxieties and just things going on in my head and things I wasn't communicating and expressing, and it just kind of turned into, I don't know, like just falling back on my relationship with food.
Yes, which again, I just want to normalize that change is not just from, point A straight line up. It has lots of dips in it, but it's two steps forward, one step back. You're still a step ahead. But if you find yourself going backwards to old habits, to old ways of coping, all that means is that there's something very intensely triggering going on. And that's when you just have to look at, okay, what's going on in my life?
Yeah, that makes sense. And I don't know, thinking about old habits and stuff, I remember, I don't know how long ago, maybe like over a year ago when I called in and was talking about the chewing and spitting, like I never want to go back to that. That was so horrible. I don't know if you remember.
I remember.
That was just like,
yes, that was very early.
That was just not fun. And I hope never to go back to that. And I don't want to, and I won't. And I think I took your advice. I know, you said something like we were talking about trust, right? And like everything I've been through and how kind of like maybe I have like a trust, like kind of like a trust issues.
Yes.
And I kind of opened up to my boyfriend and I talked to him about it a little bit, and he was really supportive, and it also felt good just to like express and tell him like what's going on with me, So
yes,
that was nice as well. I feel like your advice really helped.
Yeah, that's how, because what you told me of your boyfriend was that he's someone in whom you can put your trust, but you weren't.
I can't hear you, Dr. Nina. Can you say it again?
What I remember about your boyfriend is that he is someone that you can trust. He had shown that he was vulnerable himself. He was there for you. He was someone in whom you could put your trust. And yet you were still so mistrustful. So now that you are opening up to him and trusting him more, then you can fill up on that relationship.
Hello?
I don't know why you're
Hello?
Not here. I'm
Dr. Nina?
Yeah, you don't hear me? Oh. Well, Nicole, I hope you call back. But what I was, well, I'll wait for her to see if she calls back and then I'll tell her. But basically, when you trust another person, then you can have a fulfilling, satisfying relationship with that person. Here she is again. Hi, Nicole. Can you hear me now?
Dr. Nina?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Hello?
You're not hearing me.
Hello?
Ronan,
can you hear me?
I can hear you perfectly.
Oh, I can hear you now.
Oh, you can hear me now. Okay, good.
But now I can't.
Now you can't. Hmm. I don't know. I'm letting my engineer Ronan know that there's something going on.
Okay.
But
it's good now.
It's good now. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, good. So what I was saying was that when you open up and you're vulnerable to someone who he's saying it's her line. Okay. Well, hopefully your line will just stay good right now. When you open up and you're vulnerable to another person, then you can have a fulfilling, satisfying relationship with that person instead of having a relationship with food and your body and all of that. And it sounds like you put that to the test. And now how do you feel as far as the trust with your boyfriend?
I feel good. I feel more trusting.
Yes.
I even told him, like, you share things with me that are so intimate, and I don't judge you for them, and I don't want to leave you for them. But then there's something I want to share, and I freak out because I'm like, oh, if I tell him this, he's not going to want to be with me. So I kind of told him that as well.
Because
I think I trust him more. I think that was really good advice that you gave me.
Because you had transferred your terrible experience with the first boyfriend, who did not sound so nice. Ex-boyfriend of Nicole, you're not so nice. You did not treat her so well. So you had transferred that experience with him, in which it was like suddenly everything is falling apart, to the new boyfriend, and expecting the new boyfriend to act like the other boyfriend. And what you discovered is he's nothing like the first boyfriend.
No, he's really nothing. He's the exact opposite. You're so right.
Yeah.
I have a specific question for you. So last night, before we went to dinner, I'm just thinking about it. I discovered these smart sweet things. It's like candy. It's 80 calories, and it's like it has like 33 grams of carbs, but then 28 grams of fiber. So like the net carbs are low. Anyways, they taste good, and I found a new flavor at Whole Foods, so I got it. And then my boyfriend's like, oh, like, should we open this and, like, try one? And I was like, okay, like, why not? Like, let's open it and try one. But then there was some sort of, like, I don't want to say guilt, but it's like, why am I having sweets before dinner? Well, the thing is, I didn't even actually genuinely, like, want one. Like, I didn't really want one. And then, like, I had one. And then I kind of, like, felt guilty about having one. And I don't know. Am I just obsessing over?
Okay, here's what's
happening. I feel like I'm obsessing over something that doesn't really matter.
Well, here's what I think is happening. I don't think this is so much about this particular sweet stuff or whatever. I think this is about the rules that you grew up with that were so rigid that if your mother broke the rule, she would either starves herself or says, dirt should be on my head. In other words, I should be in the grave because I made this cardinal sin of eating this. So you internalized a lot of these ideas and these rules as realities, as if they are actual commandments upon all that all people must, especially you, must meet, rather than there are no rules. There are no rules.
Right.
There is no actual rule that says don't eat a candy before dinner. And I think what happened was your boyfriend did the opposite of your family, your mom. Instead of being like, well, you shouldn't have that, he's like, hey, let's open those up. So it's like he has different rules. He doesn't have those rules. Yeah, are you having
Dr. Nina?
Oh. Well,
I think something's up with the sound. Hello?
Yeah, I had the engineer check in. He said it's your line for some reason. But can you
the
hear?
The last thing I heard is you said my boyfriend did the opposite.
Yes, he did the opposite. And it's like when someone says, no, 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 you can't, you can't, you can't. And someone says, hey, let's do it. Of course, he's giving you like a 180 degree different paradigm from what you're used to. And that was very compelling, I'm sure. But then the old rules in your mind kick in. Oh, no, I shouldn't do this. So I would question the rules you have around food.
Hello?
I would question the rules you have around food.
Dr. Nina?
Yeah, I'm here. I think we're having...
Hello?
We're having some kind of technical
Hello?
Issue. I think there's something going on with her line. I had Ronan check, and Nicole, if you can hear me, he checked our line, and it seems to be something on your end, so hopefully that gets resolved. But if you can hear me, I want you to question, you and everyone who can relate to this, because I know a lot of you can relate to this, question your food rules that you don't even realize are rules. Like, oh, I can't eat after 7 o'clock at night. I can't eat dessert before I can't eat it something sweet before dinner. I can't eat this because it has this many carbs. I can't. I should. Anytime you hear one of those, that's a rule. So try to identify those rules and question them. And if you identify the rules and you're not sure whether they should be rules. Oh, here she is again. Let's hope for the best this time, Nicole. I don't think you hear me.
Hello?
Yeah, I'm here. Okay.
Hello?
Yeah, she's not hearing me.
I can't hear you, Dr. Yeah. Nina, so I'm going to hang up.
Okay. All right. Bye, Nicole. So question, anytime you come up with a should or a I feel bad because I did or I shouldn't or, you know, all of these are indicators that there's some idea you have that has to be challenged. There are no rules, because when you say I shouldn't eat that, then what happens? You just want to eat it more. You just want to break the rules. Then you feel like you've broken the rule that you created in the first place. And then you feel bad because of it. And then you're going to eat for comfort because you don't have another way of responding to yourself. So how about identifying what those rules are? If you want to share them with me, go on over to my Facebook community. It's Dr. Nina's Food for Thought community. Just join and share what you think. Share some of these food rules. And we'll have a conversation about that, because these ideas and these rules just create so much difficulty for so many people. All right. I have enough time to finish my story about Belinda. So as I was saying, people do not have enough fun in their lives. They can become overly reliant on food for fun. Now, Belinda, here's what she did. She stopped thinking about these rules. She stopped thinking, I shouldn't have cookie dough. She just started thinking, why am I wanting cookie dough? What is unsatisfying about my life? She started feeling the uncomfortable feelings and thinking the uncomfortable thoughts that she was using food to distract from. Now, she eventually got a job she liked. She started taking pottery classes, and she made some new friends, and she found that she could make cookies without binging on cookie dough. She could eat cookies in moderation. without the craving and the guilt that had tortured her for years, because she would have this physical feeling, this like she'd be making the cookie dough and she would just feel like, I've got to have it now. And it felt like a physical addiction. And she, even she herself, did not understand. She was like, why the heck can I have cookies now? How is it that I could have one or two cookies and no big deal? And I can make cookie dough and I don't have that irresistible need to eat that cookie dough. How is this possible? She said, a recovered alcoholic can't just have one drink, which may or may not be true, but that's a whole other story. So how can I, Belinda, eat a couple of cookies and stop? What's happening here? So the reason is that we have brains, but again, we also have minds. She did indeed feel a physical rush when she ate cookie dough. That's a biological response to sugar, created that pleasurable response in her brain. So from a physiological perspective, yeah, her brain was getting all lit up from sugar. But from a psychological perspective, she earlier on was displacing, distracting from her problems, displacing her helplessness over her relationship and her helplessness over her place in the community onto helplessness over food. And that had to do with her mind. So once all of these motivations, all these root issues were uncovered, and the sense of helplessness and dissatisfaction when they were worked through, she stopped using food as an escape. She stopped using food to numb. She stopped using food to distract herself or to just take her mind into that zone, just absolute numbness, or for pleasure, because she wasn't having enough fun in her life. So she realized she was not physiologically addicted to the substance of food. She had been, if we're going to use the word addiction, she had been addicted, let's say, to the experience of eating. Right? And eating addiction is different from a food addiction. A food addiction is you're addicted to the actual, substance of the food that you're having. An eating addiction is you're addicted to using food to distract, comfort, cope in some way. And the thing is that we humans are capable of learning new ways of relating and responding to ourselves and to others. And when we identify and process what's going on inside, which can be difficult because sometimes we know what's going on inside and sometimes we don't know what's going on and sometimes we don't want to know what's going on inside. But when we can do that, we can create new ways of understanding ourselves and reacting to our thoughts and reacting to our emotions. When we do that, we change our relationships with ourselves and therefore with food. Because when you heal the underlying root, you don't need food anymore because you're healed and you have new ways of coping and new ways of responding to yourself and new ways of being with yourself. So I'm talking more about this next week, but I just want to briefly talk about an article that I was interviewed for, but I think it's an article that we all need to think about. And it's called No More Body Shaming. It's by Jackson A. Thomas. And he says, body shaming statistics have indicated that 94% of teenage girls have been body shamed. 94%. And it's not exclusive to just the female gender or teenagers for that matter. Teen boys have been subjected to body shaming. Nearly 65% of teenage boys report that they've been body shamed. Excuse me. So he then talks about these two little girls, 9 and 7, who were really severely body shamed at their school. And that it was got so bad that they didn't even want to go to school. And the mother brought a suit against the school who were very defiant. They would not address it. Really, there was no commitment to train the teachers who were shaming the girl students. And there was a bold sentiment of deal with it. So she talks about that. And he says, well, where does body shaming come from and what do we do about it? And by the way, I need to tell all you guys that, of course, body shaming is not just you know, something that happens to kids or teenagers. It happens to everybody, regardless of age or gender. It happens to men, it happens to women, it happens to grandmothers and grandfathers and little kids. It happens to everybody. And the worst body shaming, of course, is the body shaming that we do to ourselves. But so it's talking about where is it coming from? Cultural ideals. Body shaming is intrinsically about shame, which is the sense that people have that there's something wrong with them, as opposed to guilt, which is the sense that they've done something wrong or they didn't do something that they should have done, says Nina Sabel Rocklin, a Los Angeles-based author and psychoanalyst specializing in food, weight, and body image issues, which you all know. I go on to say, people who experience body shaming or who body shame themselves may avoid social events, may have anxiety about being with other people, and devalue themselves. Reactions to body shaming include depression, anxiety, anger, and self-hatred. Body shaming can also lead to disordered eating, especially binge eating disorder, which is the most prevalent type of eating disorder. And yes, I have patients in their 60s and 70s who remember being teased or made fun of because of their size when they were children, and who that are that age and get like this sideways look, or they're shopping in Whole Foods or whatever grocery store they're in, and people pass and they look in their cart like, what are you eating? And they give a look of disdain. That's body shaming too. And I also talk about how there's been increased pressure on men to look fit. Social media and other media influences urge guys to forego the dad bod and be ripped and muscular. The notion that masculinity includes big muscles and six-pack abs or more contributes to bigorexia. Bigorexia, a subclinical condition in which guys feel compelled to work out, often compulsively, so they can gain muscle and are bigger to fit what they perceive as the cultural ideal. And then he interviews Dr. Janice Asher, who wrote a book about body shaming, who says it may also lead to increased risk of metabolic syndrome, which puts people at a higher risk for cardiovascular disease. She says people are more likely to be bullied, to suffer decreased self-esteem, and they have fewer higher academic and job prospects. They're a greater risk for depression and anxiety. So she says, and I wholeheartedly agree with this, to overcome body shaming and keep your mental health intact, the first step is to stop shaming yourself. And Savelle Rocklin says it's important to cultivate an attitude of gentle kindness towards oneself, and don't be the food police. Turn your inner critic into a friend. That's an essential part of emotional well-being, and it makes a huge difference when it comes to being able to withstand the stigma of body shaming. And here, something along the lines of, do you really need to eat that? Is not helpful. Never in the history of time has anyone responded, good point, I actually don't need to eat this. Thanks for your help. So the mother of the daughters who were body shamed said, I want to empower my daughters and other girls to stand up and speak out against injustices. In an elementary classroom, all children should be excited to learn. They stole that excitement and replaced it with fear, anxiety, and self-consciousness. All people have a birthright. We all have a birthright to be happy and feel good about ourselves and live our best lives on this planet. And body shaming steals that from you. So if you're body shaming yourself, think about it. You're stealing your own joy from yourself. Let's figure out why you're body shaming yourself, what brought you to the point where you relate to yourself this way, and I'm here to teach you some new ways of responding to yourself so you don't use food or body shaming attacks or any food, weight, body issues as a distraction from yourself. So that is our show for today. Thank you so much for joining me here on the LA Talk Radio. I'm here every Wednesdays at 10 a.m. Pacific. You can listen live or you can listen later on Apple Podcasts or anywhere where you get podcasts. And I still have just a few copies of my new book, The Binge Cure, 7 Steps to Outsmart Emotional Eating. You can get it for free. You just have to pay shipping and handling. You can get it at drnina.info. That's drnina.info. Grab yours while there are still some left. There are definitely limited copies, but I hope you get yours and let me know what you think. Bye for now and see you next week.
You're listening to The Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle-Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.